everybody, and welcome back to the Drive Pink Dialogue. This is episode number 7, and we're here to talk about Inter Miami's throttling of their rival yesterday afternoon. I am your host, Scotty. I'm here with my co-host, Soar. How are you feeling today, man?
I'm feeling on top of the world, man. Absolutely 5-star performance by Inter Miami over the week. And what better way to start the weekend? Feeling absolutely buzzing.
Absolutely buzzing is exactly how I would describe it. In this show, we are going to talk about DeAndre Yedlin at the end. We're going to talk about Federico Redondo a little bit. But obviously, the big topic of today's show is the 5-0 beatdown. And my first comment is quoting Inter Miami's Twitter account when I say, Papi es Papi, because Inter Miami showed who's the big boy in this rivalry. Give me your just top line thoughts.
In one sentence, surprised the way we played, not surprised that we won, surprised that Orlando didn't show up. Overall, fantastic game, lots of positives to take away. It just felt like everything was clicking. And it was only a matter of time before this lineup started to click together and the chemistry showed. And I felt like the pieces just fit perfectly together in this game. So, great start. Yeah,
just about everything went right in this game. Let's get started with the lineup because I think we both expected a little bit of change going into this game. And the big one that both of us thought was going to happen and we were both wrong on is Leo Campana starting over Luis Suarez. Suarez did lead the line with Robert Taylor and Messi. The midfield was the same. The back line was the only change where Nicolas Freire came in for Sergei Christophe and obviously Drake Callender in goal. So only one change. What were your thoughts when you saw the 11?
I've never felt better to be wrong than I did to see Suarez start. So I'm very happy to be proven wrong there. I honestly thought that Suarez was carrying a little bit of a knock on his knee, and that's probably why Campana would start. But I actually predicted Freire to start as well in the back line, and I was happy to see him get some minutes and a good chunk of the game. And he played really well as well. I'm sure we're going to get into it. But overall, the lineup was very much expected. But thankfully, Tata Martino is the coach and not us in starting Luis Suarez.
Exactly. I think we both saw Tata Martino's comments about Suarez dealing with some soreness in his knee. And I know that we've been hearing this over the last year, but it's just something that this was the first time it was happening on our watch, you know, while we're watching the games. And you can see maybe he was struggling. We also saw him come off a little bit earlier in the game on last weekend against the Galaxy than he did in the first game. So I think we were both reasonable to think that there was a chance he wasn't going to start, especially with another game coming in the midweek. So that's why we thought Campana was going to start, and we were both wrong. I also thought we might get a little rotation in the midfield. I thought David Ruiz might get the start in this game over Diego Gomez. And the reason I thought that was because Inter Miami's bench, while not bad, doesn't have a lot of game wreckers. And the way I thought this game was going to play out, I thought having options off the bench that could change the game would be really valuable. And of course, that wasn't necessary by the time we got there. So Tata absolutely played it right. We did see Freire come in. You did make that call. What do you think that says about Nicolas Freire and Sergei Christophe? I didn't think that change was going to happen because I thought they were going to keep the same back line that had been going well. But obviously, Tata wanted to make the change now.
Yeah, if you'd asked me this question before the preseason, I would have been concerned about the fact that, you know, our defense hasn't been doing that well. And I would want Ferrer to start as quickly as possible because in the one game that he played, he looked really good. And I think he was brought in to be the starting center back. But with the way Christophe and Aviles have started the season, I think our defense looked very solid in the first two games. And I would have expected Tata Martino to have gone into this game with the two centre-backs as well. Obviously, I predicted Freire to come in, but that was because of the rotation aspect of it. Now, having seen Freire play a full 70 minutes, and having his official debut. I think it's great that we have two center backs in Christophe and Nicolas Freire, where we know that they're reliable, they're dependent, and they're both very solid. So it was really good to see Freire in the game. But I think in terms of what it says, I think it just talks about the depth of the team and the depth of the defense. And I wouldn't mind either or starting. And going back to this game that we play, or whether you'd be nervous to see Christophe come in or whether you'd be nervous to see Freire come in, I think at this point, I'm very happy with the overall bench strength as well as the starting strength of our defensive structure. And I think everything is really clicking in that back line. So it'll be... It's good to have those options of Freire versus Christophe, and good to have that dilemma of who should we start.
I think this says that Freire is the man, right? Like,
yeah.
You're right, they brought him in to be the starter, but again, I just think based on the way the first two games went, how the back line held up, I thought going into a rivalry game, going into the first game of the Champions, CONCACAF Champions Cup, I felt they were going to stick with a consistency. And this tells me that they see Freire as a level above Christophe in the starting lineup. This is the guy they wanted to make sure was ready for the do-or-die games coming up this week. And so to put him in this game, to me, that says that Tata feels really comfortable with him, that he's doing really well, and that he's the guy that they want back there in the big moments. I'm sure we'll talk about Freire more on an individual level later, but I did think it was important to talk about the lineup as we got started. Let's get into the game. It started fast, and unlike last game where Inter Miami really struggled for the first half an hour or so, they didn't struggle at all in this one. Julian Gressel makes a nice low cross to Luis Suarez. Suarez sort of redirects it towards goal, puts it past Galese, the keeper, and Inter Miami was off and running 1-0 right out of the gate.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic start. We predicted it to be a very physical start, and it was physical to start with. There were a couple of fouls. Diego Gomez got in the face of the midfielders immediately. I think he had 3 fouls in the first 5 minutes. And I was screaming at my screen and being like, calm down, because you don't want a yellow card or an early red card to just completely change the game. So it was a frantic start. It was a physical start, but everybody looked sharp. I think Suarez made that first goal. He won the ball off of Araujo, I believe. Messi passes it off to Gressel, who takes up a really good pocket of space on the right side. And what a pass into him, into Suarez. And if this was Suarez from the last game or the preseason, I would have expected him to miss it, because he hasn't been great at his first-time shots, and he hasn't had the most clinical finishes. But what a finish. Absolutely rocket past the keeper. I don't think there was much chance to save that. So, fantastic start.
I want to give more credit to Julian Gressel for this pass, yeah, because this is the thing that we haven't seen from Gressel yet, at least result in a goal, and we wanted to see from him. And that's his ability to be in good spots and then fire precise passes into the box that lead to chances. And this was based on the momentum of Suarez and the defender, he had to make a hard low cross, and he had to make it sort of right at the hips of Suarez, and Suarez had to sort of wait for it a little bit. But that's what created the separation that allowed him to redirect it towards goal. And I think a worse player would have tried to lead Suarez, would have not put enough power on the or pace on the pass, and it wouldn't have gotten there in time. And so to see that, I think, was really good. And it showed me what Julian Gressel can be for this team. I think it really highlighted how, and we'll see more as the game goes on, but how his impact, what his impact can be on this team.
Yeah, and I think there was something interesting in this game which worked in Gressel's favor, and he wasn't doing this in the previous games, but I think he was taking up the wide channel positions a lot more in this game than he had been in the previous games. And I think that's where he's very dangerous at. Like, we know his crosses are absolutely fantastic. And the last couple of games, we didn't necessarily see him get into those positions, get into those wide channels. And I don't think he delivered any crosses in the last game against the Galaxy. But yeah, I think he was most effective on that right side this game, and that was a big difference maker. I think he was able to stretch out the back line for Orlando City, and that kind of opened up the spaces for Suarez as well. So overall, I think great first goal.
All right, let's move on to the second one because it's the same tandem again. Luis Suarez sort of bodies an Orlando City midfielder. Kind of the ball lands at the feet of Julian Gressel, who just sort of taps it with the outside of his foot over the Orlando City line towards Luis Suarez. And then Suarez does what he does and he puts in the back of the net. What were your thoughts on this goal?
This one kind of reminded me of the Robert Taylor Messi goal that they recreated in the 3-1 win. I think that was in August. When we played Orlando last, and what a pass by Gressel, and a great finish, a great low finish by Luis Suarez as well. And they just seem to have developed this really quick synergy in this game, especially, which I'm really looking forward to going forward as well, because I think having the given goal that they were able to create and construct between the two themselves and the chemistry that they were displaying was absolutely fantastic. And yeah, what a pass from Gressel. I think two great passes, value for money, and showed why we got him in.
It's not in the highlight videos, but I'm pretty confident that Julian Gressel made a nice long ball to start that buildup and then sort of carried it forward. Jordi Alba then gave it to Suarez, who then, you know, made the whole play happen. This goal, more than the first one from Suarez, really made me excited, because you saw the hip control, the body control, the ability to shoot with both legs or both feet. It was really like a classic goal for a striker. It's really, there's not a lot of players on the pitch who have that sort of body control and the ability to put a ball on target with that sort of power. Midfielders don't do that, right? That's a classic striker's goal. And I had been worried that we weren't going to see that type of goal from Suarez, or at least we weren't going to see what made him so great as a striker. And so to see that in this game, and that second goal, I really think personified that, because it was the, you know, the hip control, the ability to body off the defender, the ability to place it in the back, you know, in the bottom corner. All of it was just really, really impressive. And I that to me was the most exciting part about that, at least for those first two goals. Moving forward, because this was a game where we did a lot, into the 29th minute, Luis Suarez gets the ball from Julian Gressel off a turnover. Gressel puts a forward pass into Suarez, who then dumps it off for Robert Taylor for an easy tap-in. Luis Suarez didn't go for the hat trick. He went for the easy goal. Robert Taylor is rewarded with his second of the season. What'd you see on that play?
Again, Gressel, man, he's just everywhere. One thing that I think worked really in favor of Miami was the high line that Orlando City was playing. And we saw that being exploited a couple of times by Luis Suarez. And coming back to him, and I think we're going to talk a lot about him this podcast, I think the fact that excited me the most was seeing him actually take defenders on and try to run past that high line and actually trying to make run into the behind the defenders, which was great. And it created a lot of opportunities. I think this was one of them as well, where the Orlando backline was quite high and Luis Suarez was just able to make this really good run behind the defenders. Gressel's pass was really good. I was surprised that he didn't go for the hat trick, because why wouldn't you? And I would have expected him to take that shot and probably finish it. But good on him to just deliver that into Robert Taylor's feet for an easy tap-in, because I think a 3-0 scoreline looks a lot more comfortable in the first half. And 2-0 is the most dangerous scoreline in soccer. So it was great that he was able to judge that accurately and just be like, we're going to go with the simple pass, get the goals in, and was very unselfish. So great attitude, great play all around. And I think the chemistry was just flowing.
Yeah, we're going to come back to this goal when we talk about what Orlando City did wrong in this game, because I think it really highlights one of their biggest tactical flaws. And one of the biggest things that Inter Miami can take advantage of that we saw last season, and I do want to spend some time on it, but It was good to see Suarez be selfless. It's clear that he's not letting the noise get to him. He doesn't feel like he has to prove himself. He doesn't feel like it's all about him scoring goals. He understands that it's a team game. And of course, as a veteran and a superstar, he understands all that. But just to see it in live action for Inter Miami, it was really good to see. He did almost get that hat trick in the 44th minute. It was a beautiful ball played forward. Suarez makes the run, times the run pretty well, and then puts it past Galese, which was, for a second there, it seemed like 4-0. It would have been Suarez's hat trick. It did get called off sides, and a very, very quick VAR review that, you know, I think may have been a little bit longer and a little bit more scrutinized if we had the regular refs in. What do you think about that? Because I know you wanted to talk about it.
Yeah, I think that goal should have stood. It was very close, and I wish they spent a little bit more time and drawn the lines at least to see if it was offside or not, because the commentators mentioned it wasn't a clear and obvious error, but I feel like in an offside decision, it shouldn't be that. It shouldn't be gray. It should be black and white. Either he's offside or he's not. And if they'd drawn the lines and seen what the situation was, it would have been easier for the viewers as well to be like, okay, we know his foot was offside or his arm was offside or whatever. But a very quick VAR decision, which was kind of surprising, but we know the refereeing hasn't been great over the last couple of days of games. So shame that Suarez was not able to get his goal. But again, so many positives from that. The fact that he looks so sharp, the fact that he's playing off of the shoulders of defenders and making those runs in, just, you wouldn't have seen him do that in the last game. And I hope that it was the rest that helped him in his favor of having 6 days off or whatever Tata spoke to him about. I think it just seemed like he was in a very different place this game, and long may that continue into the season.
Yeah, I agree. It would have been good to see that they take a little bit more time to look at that play, because to me, it wasn't clear and obvious, and there's no way they could have told that from either the angle we saw or from in the 30 seconds they took to look at it. And I think Suarez was right to be really angry that they didn't spend more time on it.
Well, I don't want to. Livid.
He was. I don't want to dwell on it too much, because we did win the game 5-0. So it's hard to complain about not being given a goal when that is the final scoreline. So moving on, that was sort of the last big moment of the first half. Inter Miami goes in with a 3-0 win or a 3-0 lead. What were you thinking at this point? Because it was, you know, we expected a really tight game. I thought it was going to be 0-0 at halftime, and we're up 3-0. We're dominating. Orlando City looks lost. Luis Suarez and Julian Gressel, the two biggest question marks on this team so far, have had the biggest impact. What were you thinking at that point?
I was obviously very happy with the performance. I was like, okay, this is going to be a comfortable evening, but I hope we start the second half the same way we started the first half, because 3-0 in the first half always can be dangerous, and all they needed was one more goal back and then the momentum of the game would have shifted. So as happy as I was a bit skeptical as well going into the second half, because we've seen that this Miami team hasn't been able to string an entire 90-minute performance together in the last couple of games and hasn't shown that ability yet. So I was a little bit nervous, but obviously 3-0 is a great scoreline to go into. And the team was showing some really positive signs. As you said, two of the pieces that we'd questioned were showing up, were doing their thing. And we weren't even relying on Messi in the first half. I barely saw him, you know, touch the ball in that first half. So that was a really, really good sign. And yeah, it was just a really, really comfortable first half and put my mind at ease.
Yeah, I don't think I was ever concerned we were going to lose the game. But, you know, thinking back to that RSL game where we had a tremendous first half and then we really struggled in the second half for a long period. So to see them not switch off and to see them keep that intensity in the second half was really good. And then, yeah, you mentioned it. Lionel Messi wasn't a big part of it. We were winning 3-0. You know, Messi wasn't really involved in any of the goals. He wasn't dictating play. He wasn't the engine for Inter Miami. He wasn't the final product for Inter Miami. He wasn't the guy who moved the ball through the midfield for Inter Miami. I mean, it was something that I don't think we would have ever expected, and something that we haven't seen in a long time, where Inter Miami plays really well and Lionel Messi isn't at the heart of it.
Yeah, I would rephrase that saying it wasn't that he wasn't there, it's just that we didn't need him to be there, which is such a great compliment to the team. So
It wasn't about Messi. It was about other players. And of course he's still Messi, he still impacts the game, but at least by his typical standards and how much we seemingly rely on him.
Quite ironic as well, because the Orlando City fans were kind of criticizing Inter Miami for being a messy team, and you know, a lot of the conversation was about what is Inter Miami without Messi and what's the future of Inter Miami without Messi. So to have the first half performance not rely on him was kind of a vindication that this roster is actually really good. And I'm sure we'll talk about it later on as well, but let's get into the second half.
Yeah. Orlando City fans say a lot of things that aren't backed in a lot of reality, but moving forward to the second half, the first moment I want to talk about is a moment where Busquets finds Luis Suarez, who plays it to Julian Gressel, who plays it back to Suarez, who then finds Julian Gressel making a run into the box. Gressel puts the ball off the crossbar. So it's not the fourth goal that we wanted, but it was just another good play to see Suarez impacting the game in a really positive way. And Julian Gressel, this is now his second or third shot this year that he wishes he had back, because he probably should have two or three goals right now. But you know, what'd you see on that play? What'd you think?
Again, I think it was the chemistry and the passing goal that was between Suarez and Gressel, and the fact that Gressel was making a run from the midfield into the box is what we need to see more from him. I think he didn't do much of that in the first two games, and I felt like there were certain instructions this time around that he received that allowed him that freedom to go into the final third and make himself available for those, you know, passes from the striker. So the fact that he was playing off of Suarez and going into the box to receive the ball, that was a really positive sign. Obviously, the finish could have been on target. I wish it was on target, because then it would definitely have scored. But yeah, vicious shot. Unfortunately struck the post, but that fourth goal seemed to be, and the commentators mentioned this, but the fourth goal seemed to have been a little bit elusive for Miami.
Yeah, it did, especially with the offsides in the first half. But you know, with the way everything had been going for Miami, it just seemed like that was you know, a missed chance, even though it's something that probably happens on a regular basis for teams across the league. It only took two more minutes for Miami to get that fourth goal. It comes with Jordi Alba making a long run, driving the ball, you know, against the defense into the final third, passes to Suarez. Suarez dumps it back off for Jordi Alba. Jordi Alba just flicks it over the goalkeeper, but without enough pace to put it in. And so Orlando City's Robin Janssen kicks it up to try and save the ball, kicks it off the post, off of Messi's chest, and Messi just watches it squiggle in. This was Messi's first goal of the game. It was Miami's fourth, and at this point, it was sort of a laugher. I think that really stamped on this being an embarrassing result for Orlando City.
Oh, yeah. I have a huge grin on my face because of how it started off as a beautiful play and then ended up with a comedy of errors. So an interesting fourth goal. Again, we thought it might not go in because of the defender almost clearing it off his lines. Hits off the crossbar and falls to Messi. But I want to highlight two things here. I think Jordi Alba, he created this goal himself. So I wish he had finished it off. But what a run into the attacking third. Like, he carried the ball so well. And at this point, it felt like the Orlando players were kind of just struck by lightning, because they just all stood there and it felt like the game was passing them by. Because Jordi Alba passed through four players without any pressure. And was able to pass it off to Suarez. And Suarez just seemed to be at the center of everything. He was like, everyone was gravitating towards him. And again, a fantastic ball back to Jordi Alba. We should have finished it off. And the second thing was Messi, dude. He's, what, 5'6"? How tall is he? And the fact that he was able to use his strength to push off two Orlando City defenders and just wait for the ball to go in after he chested it. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
That's his dad's strength, man. He can do that once once you have a few kids, you get that extra little oomph.
Yeah.
Speaking of Messi's height, 5 minutes later in the 62nd minute, we saw the fifth goal of the game. Luis Suarez with a beautiful cross straight at Lionel Messi. Messi with the header into the opposite corner. It goes 5-0. Galesi can't believe it. Orlando City can't believe it. Orlando fans that made the trip can't believe it. You're up 5-0. What do you think of that play?
One player you didn't mention in that play was Gomez. I think Diego Gomez won that ball. So he, I think, again, I don't think he was as involved in the final third throughout the game as he would have liked to be. And I think towards the end, he started to get more involved there. But he started off that play by winning the ball. And one good thing that we saw from Miami this entire game was their pace in transition. So we were very quick to counter the ball as soon as we won it from Orlando City, which meant that the players were quite fresh and fit. And I would have expected Suarez to actually cut it back into Gomez, who was in a really good position to just tap it in as well. But what a beautiful ball straight on Messi's head. And what a header, man. Like, I don't think I've seen Messi score too many headers throughout his career. He has like 500 club goals, and headers haven't been his, or haven't needed to be his forte. So seeing him just place that header, caress it into the corner really well. Beautiful goal all around. Again, Suarez, man, what a game he had.
Yeah, after that fourth goal, which was in the 57th minute, I was thinking, okay, we have a big Champions Cup game coming up. Let's get some of these guys out and let's get, you know, a few less minutes on their legs. And then we scored the fifth goal and I said, you know what? Let's go for 7 and let's just run them all the way out there.
Because you got greedy, man. You got greedy.
I got greedy. And I was having so much fun that it was no longer about being rational. It was just about enjoying the moment and seeing how far you could push it. Okay, that's 5 goals. I think those are the important moments of the game that we really wanted to touch on. And it was a bunch of them. It was a lot of fun. Let's talk about Orlando City for a few minutes. A lot of people have said a lot of good things about this team. I think we said a lot of good things about them.
Yeah.
We thought they were going to be really good. I know you highlighted their midfield partnership as one of the things that could be the key to this game and a strength of theirs. What did you think about Orlando City?
I was made to look stupid, man. That's what happened. I was made to look very stupid. I think tactically they were set up for failure a little bit. That's what my first impression was. Second impression was the occasion got the better of them. I think they were like deers in a headlight. And you mentioned this in our previous podcast that it often happens that sometimes they're unable to control their emotions and unable to handle the pressure of the event itself. And I think that's sort of what happened to them this time around as well. They were very similar to how Miami was in the last game against the Galaxy. Giving away the ball, very sloppy on the ball, misplacing a few passes. But that's not to say that we didn't see a few good things from them. If you ignored the scoreline, there were a few instances where they were cutting the Miami defense really well. They were playing some really good passes in the final third, loading that box up. I think when Miami scored the first goal, the reaction from Orlando was quite good, and Maguire had a very, very good chance in the box to make it 1-1. So there was definitely stuff that I saw from Orlando that on other days would have worked really well, but I felt like they tried a little bit too hard, were not able to keep up with Inter Miami's pressure, and gave away the ball in silly areas, in dangerous areas. And Inter Miami just punished them for every single mistake that they made. So that was one aspect of it. And then tactically, and I think we've already spoken a bit about this, I think Orlando was playing a really high line, especially at the start of the game, that Luis Suarez was able to exploit very, very effectively. Now, that may have been because they might have thought that having Suarez, and the commentator said this, play on one leg would allow them to play a high line, because Inter Miami doesn't necessarily have runners other than Diego Gomez and Robert Taylor. So they thought they'd be able to get away with it. But yeah, Miami absolutely blew them out of the water in that first half. And then the second half, it was just them trying to play catch up, man.
Yeah, I have two thoughts on what you just said. The first is, I agree that Orlando City was not set up to succeed. And what you just said about the commentators. Taylor Twellman was talking last game about how the secret to beating Inter Miami is to play a high line and dare them to beat you over the top. And I think that's so funny because the last thing you want to do is give these type of players space and time on the ball because they will crush you. And we saw that today. As far as the way this game played out, Inter Miami scored real early, and that reminded me of last year's League's Cup run. And I just pulled it up here, but I think we had an early goal against Atlanta, Orlando City, Dallas, Charlotte, Philadelphia, and we sort of, and even Nashville in the final. We had these early leads that really put a lot of pressure on the other team, and the other team just couldn't handle it. And so while it seemed like, oh, it's this Messi effect, everyone's afraid to play against Messi, everyone's scared of this big, bad Inter Miami team, it was really just that we got an early goal, and then we just controlled the game from there out, and they couldn't recover, and there was nothing they could really do about it. And that was cool to see, and it reminded me of when we were at our best last season, was getting those early goals and then just taking the life out of the other team from a, you know, confidence perspective. Orlando City, though, I mean, they're supposed to be a good team. I'm like struggling to ask this question because they have two good strikers, they have good playmakers, they have decent midfielders, they have a solid back line. What is it? Do you think this team is overrated? And by this team, I mean Orlando City.
No, and I have a reason for that. I think A, it's the start of the season. So it's really hard to judge a team when things are still coming together. Just the same way it's really hard to write off Inter Miami in the first two games and be like, is this team capable of achieving the expectations that have been set on them? I think it's going to take some time to get the chemistry going. And obviously, it's only the second game that Orlando City is playing in the MLS. So, I mean, it's going to take some time for them to click, but they have the pieces in place. And as I said, I saw some good stuff from them in very short, flashes throughout the game. I think the occasion got the better of them. I think Miami played really well to nullify a lot of Orlando's threats and a lot of Orlando's strengths. So that has to be, I think, highlighted more than saying that Orlando was really bad. I think tactically they didn't fulfill what they should have. They didn't press high enough to win the ball despite playing a high line. So that was sort of, you know, nullified. And yeah, I think overall it was just a really bad day at the office for them. And it'll be too harsh to just judge them off this one game. So I would like to give them time. And we're going to meet them again in May, I believe. So that might be a completely different game. I hope it's not, but might just be. But there's still time for them to work on their flaws and figure out some stuff.
For this game specifically, and this is, I think, how I saw it tactically, was not that they played a high line, but they played they played with a lot of width. And I think This is the Achilles heel to any team that's trying to defend this Inter Miami team. The best way to defend this team is to play with four in the back and play really tight, or three in the back, but play really tight and clog up the middle so that there's no space for Suarez and, more importantly, no space for Messi. And that is how you most effectively shut those two guys down. And at least, you know, we'll see if Suarez can get to work through that. But last season when we saw Messi struggle, it was because the opposing team had four guys in the back or three guys in the back that played very tight and they clogged up the middle. There was no space. And so this was my biggest concern about us playing in a 3-5-2 and not playing in this 4-3-3 is we need guys that are going to play wide, that are going to spread the defense out. We didn't see that against the Galaxy. They were very disciplined in the back four. They played very tight, and we didn't have a lot of space to create in the penalty box. Lionel Messi provides all of the creativity you need in the central part of the pitch, but if there's too much congestion in there, it's really hard. And so for Orlando City to play that high line, but then to also have their fullbacks playing sort of by the touch lines and to have so much space in between the defenders, I think that was their ultimate downfall. I mentioned this earlier, but that goal where Julian Gressel gets the turnover and then passes it forward to Luis Suarez, and then Suarez dumps it off to Robert Taylor. Was the epitome of that. And if you go back and watch that replay, you see their lines are so spread. They have so much width in that back line that if you turn the ball over, there's so much room for Robert Taylor and Luis Suarez and then Julian Gressel to make creative runs to get behind the defense. And they don't need pace to do that because they're smart enough to make those runs, time them well, and to and we have passers that can, you know, see that.
So here's my question. Do you think it was Orlando's decision to play with that width? Because I myself have it written in my notes that the width helped Inter Miami a lot and it created spaces in the field. And we talked about this during our preview as well, that the more Inter Miami uses the width, the better they're going to look. But do you think the reason that there was so much width in the Orlando backline was because they were set up that way? Or was it because the Inter Miami players were actually stretching the field out quite a bit? Because you saw Gressel take up that position on the right side a lot more. Jordi Alba was, you know, stretching the play out, was not afraid to sit back with his defense. And he took the, he used the wide channels really well. We didn't see that much from Yedlin in that sense, but it just felt like Miami was able to stretch out the field a lot more. Do you think that was Miami's tactic or whether that was Orlando's tactical flaw?
I think that's Orlando City's modus operandi, because we've seen when they press and when they play really aggressively, their fullbacks are really key to that. They really push wide. They really push up to try and create turnovers that they can turn into to opportunities. And so they have a mode where they sit back and defend and are really stout. But I think we both talked about how we didn't think they were going to come out like that. We thought they were going to be really aggressive, pressing really hard. And that mode for them, that when they do press, when they play really aggressively, the fullbacks are really important. And they support their center backs with their two defensive midfielders. And so yes, I think that's what Orlando City does. I think they tried to do what they did. And I think that they think they're really good. And so they thought they could come into Chase Stadium and play their style and have it work. And we saw what happened.
Yeah. No, I think you're right, because that width created a lot of pockets of spaces throughout the midfield. And I think Inter Miami occupied those spaces really well. I think both Gressel and Gomez did a great job of making themselves available. Messi was obviously doing Messi things, and Sergio Busquets also had time on the ball, which allowed him to, you know, nullify some of those turnovers. But another interesting aspect of this was, if you look at the statistics, Orlando City had more of the ball. They had 52% possession compared to 48%, which has been very different from what Miami's previous two games have been, where we've dominated possession to quite some extent in the preseason, more specifically as well, and then against RSL. Not so much against the Galaxy, but it was really heartening and positive to see that Miami was able to work off the ball really well as well, because when Orlando City had the ball, Miami was defending with a 4-4-2 structure and defending in two blocks of four. And that organization and that structure was so key to getting those turnovers, because I think we were putting in the tackles at the right time. If someone got bypassed, so for instance, if someone like a Gressel got bypassed, there was somebody right behind him to cover up and clean up the mess. So I think that 4-4-2 structure, we're going to see a lot more of it going forward. And I think having Busquets sit off a little bit from the center backs and not push too far up the field is going to be key to try and nullify some of his athletic deficits.
Yeah, I agree. I saw the same thing out of possession. It was 4-4-2. And I guess that probably did contribute to the width for Inter Miami, where Gressel was sort of already out there playing as that sort of wide midfielder when we would have quick transitions. I agree. It also creates more defensive solidity. And I think that's probably why we didn't see DeAndre Yedlin get up very much, because Gressel was already sort of in those wide areas. Just based on how we were defending. It's going to cost Inter Miami Robert Taylor as like a playmaker if he's playing that deep, because his best spot is sort of at the corner of the box where he can take a step to the right and fire. But if you have Jordi Alba that can play in those wide areas on the left, playing in that 4-4-2 really gives you more defensive solidity and, you know, a little bit more width. I'd be interested to know, you know, were not in the coaches meeting, but I would be interested to know if that's something that Tata wanted to do for the purpose of creating more width offensively. And maybe we'll find that out over the next couple of weeks. But I agree. I think that's something that we would see more of, although we'll have to talk about how the team's going to change without DeAndre Yedlin. Let's talk about Inter Miami's, other things that Inter Miami did in this game. You know, we talked about the 4-4-2 defensively. We talked about, was this just about great players making great plays? Or, what did you see? What did you see from the midfield especially?
So the most important thing for me that stood out was that everything seemed to be functioning in tandem. In the previous games, we've seen one player shine while the other's having a bit of an underwhelming game. So for instance, if you take Gresso and Diego Gomez, both of them had specific instructions and both of them were doing them to a T. I felt like every player had their specific ideas of what they were supposed to do on that pitch, and everyone was fulfilling their job. Even with the defense, I think Nicolas Freire was kind of like the sweeper, whereas Avilés was the tracker of the runners. And it felt like the tactical plan that Inter Miami had come with was working fantastically because every player knew their roles, every player knew where they wanted to be. And obviously, I think the intensity that with which we started was really, really helpful in trying to win the ball in the right places. And the passing was sharp. It was quick. It didn't feel lethargic. I used the word pedestrian last time when we played against the Galaxy. So that was so good to see that we were playing with energy. And that's what this team was actually missing. Having all those 11 players play with the same energy and the same mindset and know their roles. And I think that worked to a T in this particular game.
I want to talk about this roster as a whole, because last season, they were really bad in the beginning of the season. They were missing a 10. They were missing a playmaker until Messi arrived. And then, if Messi got hurt or if he missed games for international duty, they were still missing a 10 and a creative playmaker. And I think one of the things that Tata and Chris Henderson did this offseason was try to build a roster that could survive without Messi and still be a quality team. And this was the first sign. This game was the first sign that that actually happened. I think we both thought that Julian Gressel was going to be one of the biggest creative playmakers when Messi's not on the pitch. And then obviously I think yesterday we saw that Luis Suarez is also quite creative and can put the right balls in the right places. So how much better do you feel after seeing yesterday's game for when this team is without Lionel Messi, whether it be for international duty or whatever?
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of instances throughout the season where we're going to be missing some of our key players. And one of those key players is Lionel Messi. But just seeing the way that this team is developing, obviously, there are still flaws. It's by no means a complete team. And there are issues that should be sorted out.
It looked like it yesterday.
Didn't look like it yesterday. But I think there was a lot of positive in the sense that there were players who were taking up onus and responsibility of making those plays and creating those opportunities without having to go through Messi all the time. Whether it was Diego Gomez winning the ball up, whether it was Gresso finding the right pockets and putting the right pass in, whether it was Robert Taylor showing up in the right position for Luis Suarez to pop that ball off. I think, as I said, the synergy is just starting to now function together. And the more and more this continues to happen, the less we'll see Messi standing up. Not that we don't need him, but I feel like he's going to pull everyone up with him, obviously. But this team is going to rely lesser and lesser on Messi as the season goes up. And I hope I get proven right in this. I don't want to be sitting at the end of the season being like, damn, those 5 games that Messi missed was the worst that we've played. But I think there's just a lot of potential and a lot of players away from Messi. And I think it just needs to all fit together. And I think we were talking about this offline, but it's a matter of how these pieces are going to work together and work in the absence of Messi. And I do think Tata has a plan for that to work. And we saw glimpses of that in this game. So,
yeah, the Copa America is this summer. So we'll definitely miss Messi for, you know, 5 to 7 games for that. The Euros are also this summer. I'm sort of looking at the roster now, and the guys that I think we might miss are Diego Gomez, Kramaski, maybe for the Olympics, Robert Taylor, Sergei Christoph, and then, of course, Messi. I don't know if Luis Suarez is still a prominent member of the Uruguay national team, but we might be missing him too. So that's going to be a significant chunk of the season that we're going to be without some key players. But I agree. I think this is a team that's better built to be competitive without those players, especially once we get Kramaski back and Redondo in, and maybe Ian Frey and Franco Negri. Yeah, so it's actually really exciting, some of the guys that we have coming back. And one of the things that is allowing this team to be successful without those players, or at least in this game, was that they had the whole week off. And I know this is something you wanted to talk about. How big of a difference does it make that they had six days between the LA Galaxy game and this game, something that seemingly we haven't had in a long time?
Massive, massive difference. Not just in terms of having fresh legs and just recovery, I think tactically as well. Tata, I think, mentioned in his post-match that this was the first time since he's been here that they've, or the second time since he's been here, that they've had at least 6 days to just work on the tactics and work in the training field. Because a lot of the times when you're playing midweek and then on the weekend, what happens is that you're just left to do some recovery and then discuss the film from the previous game and just plan out stuff for the next game. But the 6 days allowed them to actually tactically work out a lot of the stuff on the field and figure out what they want to do. And you could see that on the pitch. You could see that everyone knew what they wanted to do. And as I said, they all seemed to have roles that they were fulfilling. So in that sense, it worked really, really well. And I would caveat this by saying that don't expect another performance like this, or don't expect Inter Miami to perform like this week in, week out. I think the 6 days off were really, really helpful. We mentioned about how none of the teams who played midweek actually won their games in the MLS. So it's definitely a big factor. The roster depth comes into play, but I think having those 6 days off gives you a tactical as well as a just a recovery upper hand compared to the other team.
Yeah. I don't want to give Orlando City too many excuses, because they did rotate pretty heavily in the CONCACAF Champions Cup midweek game. They had that tie sort of locked up already. I'm looking at the schedule from last year, and between the first game of League's Cup, which was Messi's debut, and the end of the season, they didn't have a single week where they had the entire roster available for an entire week. They missed a few midweek opportunities, but those were during the international breaks. And as you guys may remember, Inter Miami had a lot of international players last season that represented their international team. So their national team. So, I think maybe after that last game of the season against Charlotte, they had a few weeks before they played that friendly against NYCFC. It was probably the longest period of time that they've ever had to just work on their tactics and work on their chemistry on the practice pitch. And even that, Lionel Messi left for the Ballon d'Or at one point. So, and then in this preseason, they were traveling and they weren't on the pitch every day. So I think that's an underrated comment that you brought up, because it's something they really haven't had since Tata and Messi came. Is there anything else you want to talk about tactically from this game, about the team, about their performance, before we move on to awards and individual talk?
No, I think tactically, I think we've covered quite a lot of the stuff. I think what you missed was Messi's free kick. One that hit the post from 25 yards out, and another that hit a two-year-old kid sitting in the in the stands. So I don't know if you saw that video of that, but that was quite funny. His parents were like, or her parents were like, please don't cry. It was Messi's free kick. You'll be fine. I'm like, please. Messi can hit me with his free kick any day of the week, man, honestly.
Okay, let's get into the Miami Man of the Match. For those that aren't familiar with the show, this is our Man of the Match the player who is our man of the match, it's only from Inter Miami's players. Of course, in this game, it's obviously going to be an Inter Miami player. Why don't you go first, and I'll let you know if I disagree with you.
It's the one and only man, the one-legged Luis Suarez. Goals, should have had a third. Two assists, was everywhere on that field.
Should have had a third or fourth assist too. Yeah, if Alba scores that goal, it's his assist. And if Gressel scores that goal, it's also his assist. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of positives from Suarez. I don't think in all my time watching football, at least in the recent years, I've seen a player being criticized so heavily for a drop-off in their levels and then coming back and answering those critics in such an emphatic manner. Like, I was ready to sound the burial for Luis Suarez's career, honestly, after those first two games. I know you've been very bullish on how good Suarez is and how good he's going to be, but I was worried, and he put everything to bed in that sense, in that game, man. Fantastic performance. The fact that it wasn't like he was lucky in scoring goals or he was just in the right place at the right time. The fact that he was involved in every single offense that we were actually creating was a big testament to the player that he is and how good he's going to be for us in the long term.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It wasn't none of these, aside from maybe the first one, was just a being in the right place at the right time type of goal or type of positive play. He was finding good spots. He was clinical. He was precise. He had great vision. I mean, he was just incredible. He does finish with two goals. He finishes with two assists. He now has five goal contributions on the season, which I'm sure leads MLS. So for a guy that was being criticized and being told he was done and being, you know, some people were mentioning that he should be benched, he now leads the MLS in goal contributions. That's amazing. I completely agree. Man of the match performance. I think he would, if he played 90, he would have gotten that third, the hat trick goal, or at least a hat trick of assists. He was just good all around, man. He was taking up good spots. He was making good runs, making smart runs. He was taking advantage of the defense, and making, you know, finding the flaw in their tactical setup and taking advantage of it. And, you know, he had two shots and he had two goals. I mean, he was clinical too. So he was just great, man. I don't know what else to say.
And it's interesting that you say that he has the highest goal contributions, because Messi got two goals in that game as well and nobody's talking about it. It's insane.
I know.
So great for Suarez to actually shine and for once show his class as well. And I think this is going to be his, you know, I'm here moment. And hopefully he can just kick off from here.
Yeah, this is for the rest of the season, or at least for the next three or so months. If anyone is concerned about his legs, or he doesn't look like he's making an impact, or people think he should be benched, they're going to be able to point to this game as, what are you talking about, man? This is what he can be if he's, you know, he's doing it. And I think we're going to see more of this as the season goes on. And that's really exciting. Moving on to our next award. And of course, this is going to be a little tougher when you win 5-0, but we have to do it to be consistent. This is the Heron That Flew North Award. It's the heron that's doing the wrong thing or is going the wrong direction. And I don't know if we're going to agree on this player, but who did you have for the heron that flew north?
This really pains me, man. It pained me last time to give this award as well. It pains me this time to give this award.
It always does.
The same player, and it's Sergio Busquets again. As good of a game as everyone had, and as good of a game Sergio Busquets had compared to his previous games, he wasn't entirely flawless either. Like, if you look at his statistics, he had 5 ground duels. He didn't win a single one of them. He lost possession some 15 times, committed 3 fouls, was dribbled past twice. There were a few brain dead moments where he just gave the ball away without any pressure again. And it just seems like he's still trying to get back into the groove of things. And I think the tactical setup or the instructions that were given to him of not going too far forward and getting too involved in the attack kind of helped him and helped the defense. But yeah, just not a great performance all round. I think he had a SOFA score of about 6.6, which was the lowest on the Miami team. So unfortunately, he has to take the award for the heron that flew north again. And I can't wait for him to not be on this list in the future game reviews that we do. But for this one, it's him. As good as the team was and as good as he was as well, he wasn't perfect.
Yeah, I think, you know, we know his athletic deficiencies and we understand what it might take to move past those. But the thing that, at least for me, has been the most concerning is those sort of the turnovers that are just from a lack of concentration. And there was one really early in this game, and I think it might have even been before Inter Miami's first goal. And I just thought to myself, ugh, here we go again.
Here we go, and, yeah.
But, you know, he maybe had one or two in the first half, but it wasn't as consistent as it had been in the first two games. So maybe just the fact that we were up early and big kind of gave him the confidence to just relax and to just play his game. For the sake of not giving another player the Heron That Flew North award, I'm going to agree with you on Busquets. He also just didn't have incredible impact. I mean, can you imagine a game where we score five goals and none of them have anything to do with Sergio Busquets? It's just surprising. He is a DP player on this team. He's, you know, as far as the roster makeup, you're expecting him to have a bigger impact than Jordi Alba, a bigger impact than Suarez, a bigger impact than Drake Callender, a bigger impact than Leo Campana and some of the high earners on this team. And we haven't seen that so far. So I'm fairly confident that he's going to continue to improve. I do think this was a step in the right direction. And maybe that was just because Orlando City they didn't have their heads in the game after the first 30 minutes or so. But I think this is a step in the right direction, if not still probably the player that was least impressive in this game. I just do want to take that as an opportunity to talk about the midfield as a whole, though, because I do think the midfield played really well. They weren't put under pressure a ton by Orlando City, but moving the ball forward and causing turnovers, especially Gressel and Diego Gomez and Robert Taylor when he was there, I thought was pretty good. Okay, let's move on to our custom awards. We have two each. And I'll go first. Actually, I'm going to let you go first for your first award because you have one already picked out and I don't. Yeah. And I'm going to take this opportunity to come up with a good name.
All right. The first one that I have... It's the Papi S. Papi Award.
Oh, God.
You have to think slightly outside the box for this one, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on who you think it is.
Is it Julian Gressel?
Oof, not entirely. I don't think you can get this one, so I'm going to let you go.
Yeah, go ahead.
Let you off the hook on this. And this might be a bit of a cheating on my part, but I would like to give this award to the one and only Gerardo Martino for his brilliant tactical setup in this game. I think Papa Martino had an absolutely spectacular tactical performance in this. Of course, we've discussed the tactics and stuff, but I was slightly underwhelmed by his decision making in the last couple of games in terms of when he brought in the substitutes and the team that he might have picked. Of course, we expected the same teams, but I just felt like the imprint that he had on this game was there to see, and he really set up the team tactically really well, which may not have caught Orlando completely off guard, but they weren't expecting Inter Miami to come out with that sort of energy and that sort of being that tactically drilled as they were. So this award goes to him. And if you have any comments on Papa Martino, I'd love to hear that.
Yeah, I just, I love the award. I would never have guessed it. But yeah, he got this team ready to play, and I think he deserves a lot of credit for that. I think we were ready to call. We were ready to see Campana start, even though we still believe in Suarez. I think we were. I think that we weren't overly impressed with what he had done so far, either in the preseason or so far this season. So to see him come out and do this and get the team ready to play like this from the first minute, and to not have a drop off in the second half, and to expose Orlando City's team for some of their deficiencies, and using our best players to do that, I agree. I think he deserves a lot of credit.
Very well. On to the next award.
Okay, my first award is the True Heron Award.
Is this going to DeAndre Yedlin?
This is indeed going to DeAndre Yedlin. And I might have to get a little better at coming up with my awards, so they're not so easy to guess. But before recording, we found out that DeAndre Yedlin is going to be traded to the traded to FC Cincinnati. And I would have given him this award regardless of that. DeAndre Yedlin made his 82nd appearance yesterday for Inter Miami, and that tied Victor Ulloa for the most in Inter Miami history. He was one away from owning that record. This is a player that came in 2022. We traded Christian Maikun, a younger player, just to get his rights. He has been the captain for Inter Miami a lot. Last season, he captained the team more than anyone else. He's a leader in the clubhouse. He is athletic on a team that doesn't have a ton of athletic players. As far as fullbacks, as far as right backs in the MLS, I think, you know, USMNT fans may not love him on the national team, but I think he's one of the better right backs in MLS, especially from an American perspective. And for a team that's not relying on him, he's a really nice player to have.
Yeah, man. First Gregory, and then DeAndre Yedlin. This one kind of hurts as well because it was unexpected. I gave the award for tactical acumen to Tata Martino, but I might have to take it back because what the hell are they thinking back there? I don't know what the idea behind this is, and I'd love to hear if you have any
Well, listen, we'll talk about the Yedlin trade after we finish awards.
Okay.
I just wanted to give him really credit for tying Ulloa's record. And, you know, he had a good game. He didn't get forward as much, but defensively he was solid. I felt like a lot of our turnovers and transitions started from that right side of the pitch. And so, you know, he had a good game. I thought he played 90. He always plays 90. And specifically for reaching that milestone, I wanted to make sure he got an award.
For sure. A big personality in that back line. I think he's the one who runs the hardest, always gives his most, and you could see that in that last game as well. So big props to him for a good performance.
Okay, what's your next award?
Ooh, which one should I go for? Because I've got a couple in mind. So I'm going to give this award, keeping in mind a player that we might not have discussed. And this could be one or two, depending on who you think it should be. But this award is for the Great Wall of Orlando Award. Oh, sorry, Great Wall of Miami Award. And who do you think this should go to?
Drake Callender.
Ooh, close.
Is it Nico more. Frede?
Yeah, it's Nico Frede.
Okay. I'd
say Nico Frede and Aviles, and maybe even put Callender up there. That triangle had.
Let's talk about Frede specifically because this was his debut, and
I think a fantastic debut considering that he hasn't played too many minutes in the preseason. He's just coming into this team, first game in a derby game as well against Orlando. I don't think he put a foot wrong there. He had a fantastic performance, great positioning, organized the back line really well. I think I saw this in the first game that he played with Aviles, but the chemistry between him and Aviles, I think they really complement each other well. And I was very, very satisfied with his performance. And an aspect of his game that I think is slightly underrated is his passing and his verticality and the way he puts the ball forward into the midfield. And I think that's going to be really useful going forward into the season. But overall, fantastic debut and congratulations to him.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that last part. when we first heard about Freddie, when we found out he was going to join Miami, one of the things that I was most concerned about was his ability on the ball, based on some of the reports we got out of Greece and out of Mexico, because he hasn't been known as a guy that's really comfortable on the ball. He hasn't been known as a guy that's a real ball progressor. And that was something we lost with Kamal Miller, who was really good on the ball. He was good at breaking lines. He was a guy that was comfortable taking a step forward to try and create better angles, or he just felt comfortable doing those types of things. And especially from a left footer, it's really a valuable piece. So, you know, Freda has to come in and replace Kamal Miller. It's a tough, tough thing because Kamal was great last season, but I agree, today was a good first step. And the biggest thing I noticed was that ability to just break lines with the ball. And it stood out to me. He's going to have a lot of responsibility this season when we play in a 4-3-3, because Jordi Alba's going to get forward a lot, and he's going to be responsible for that entire left side of the pitch, especially if we don't have, a true holding midfielder on the field. So I didn't see any, I'll be honest, I've seen some people speak really well of how he played yesterday. I didn't think he was phenomenal. I thought he was fine. I thought he was normal. I thought he was, didn't make any mistakes. And like I said, I like to see him push the ball forward, but I think there's probably better to come, and we'll see more from him.
Yeah, for sure. But I think at this point, the most that you can expect of your defense is not to make mistakes and not to stand out. Or the fact that we don't discuss them too much during the review is always a positive. So kudos to that.
Yeah. And we'll see some amazing performances from our some defenders this season that really stand out. And today or yesterday wasn't that, but it was solid. It was absolutely solid, and I feel very comfortable with him.
Yeah, and before you move on to your portion of the award and the last one, I'd just like to give a shout out to Drake Callender as well, because he had a couple of really fantastic saves again, and I think he played a big role in keeping that clean sheet. So well done to him again, and I just hope he continues this form going into the season, because, man, he's an absolute beast.
Okay, this is a tough one because they won 5-0, and there's so many players that are worthy of talking about. But I'm going to give the okay, all right award. And it's specifically okay, all right, not in no other connotation and no other intonation is that award given. The okay, all right award.
Is that like a impressed, okay, all right? Or is that like a, okay, all right, that's not too bad.
No, that's an impressed intonation. It's okay, all right. Yeah, let's do this.
I'm trying to think more tactically here because we've already spoken about Luis Suarez. That's what I would have gone for.
Suarez was gets that, the oh damn award.
Yeah, was that to Jordi Alba?
It was not, although he also had a really good game today. Yeah. I'm giving this award to Julian Gressel.
Yeah, of course.
He is worthy of praise. He does finish with 2 assists. He almost gets a goal. This was the first time that we saw Julian Gressel be the guy that we were hoping for when we signed him. A guy that can put people in the right spot at the right time to create to score goals, not just to create chances, but to score goals. And, with Luis Suarez at the end of that, and with Lionel Messi at the end of that, and with Leo Campana at the end of that, and with Robert Taylor at the end of that, I think Gressel is going to get a lot of assists, and he's going to create a lot of high quality chances. And those guys are going to be the ones to finish it off. And we saw that for the first time really in this game. I was really impressed. This is who we were promised, I think.
Yeah, and I'm not surprised. As much as I was on the Gressel bandwagon from the start since we've signed him, and I knew that he would come good, I think it just took a little bit of time for him to get into the groove of things. And I'm hoping this is where, again, like Luis Suarez, he just kicks on from here and knows that he's capable of these performances. I think he took up some really wonderful positions. His passing was fantastic. There were a couple of moments in the game, both in the first half and the second half, where he just delivered a crossball field and, completely opened up the Orlando defense and kind of took the pressure from the press that was coming in. So I think he did a lot of really good stuff, not just in the final third, but also in the middle of the park in defense as well. And I wrote down it takes two to tango, because I think Diego Gomez and Julian Gressel really complemented each other well in this particular game, because they both went in with the same intensity, with the same mindset, and their pressing structures were very coordinated, and they took away some of the responsibility from Sergio Busquets on the defensive side of things. And I think that's where Gressel's game was slightly underrated, but offensively he was fantastic. Some great, well-weighted balls into Luis Suarez for the goal, obviously, and also for the one that led to Robert Taylor's goal. And then just a really positive performance. And I think he took responsibility, which is what we expect of him. And I think in Messi's absence in future games, I think Gressel can really step up into that role, the creator role.
Yeah, I'm a lot. I'm really excited about Gressel now. I thought he might even get benched once Redondo came, and I don't think that's going to happen anymore. Listen, we won 5-0 in this game, and so there was a lot of players that were worthy of praise. Is there anyone else? You know, we only have those 6 awards, but is there anyone else that you want to highlight as worthy of talking about? I mean, Drake Callender got another clean sheet, a couple good saves. Jordi Alba had a good game. Robert Taylor got a goal. Is there anyone else that you feel like we should talk about before we move on?
Yeah, I think we don't need to go too much into detail for this, but I think Diego Gomez didn't have an outstanding game, but I think he was good. He did his job really well. We obviously expressed some concern about the midfield makeup, and we're not entirely convinced about the Gressel, Gomez, and the Busquets combination. I'm still not entirely convinced even after this game, but I think he had a good game and worthy of a shout out. And then the last point that I want to make before we move on is in the 32nd minute, there was a moment where Busquets, Messi, and Alba pressed the ball and resulted in a turnover for Miami. And that was fantastic to see 3 old heads getting into it, actually setting the tone for everyone around them, and, you know, pushing hard for the ball, creating that turnover, and winning the ball up high on the pitch. So just wanted to shout that out, because
Luis Suarez almost got in a fight right before halftime.
As
the teams were going into halftime. So
if anybody wants to question their dedication to the sport and dedication to the team, I think just look at what they did this game and you'll get your answer.
Yeah, as far as Drake Callender, just some advanced stats. He's got 3.9 goals prevented, and he's got 4.6 post shot expected XG compared to 1 goal allowed. So that's a positive plus 3.6. I mean, those are elite numbers for only having played 3 games. He's off to an incredible start to this season, and now gets a 2nd clean sheet.
Yeah,
just, you know, Diego Gomez had a solid game. David Ruiz was not bad off the bench.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Robert Taylor got his goal. Okay. That was our review of the Orlando City game. It was a lot of fun, and I think maybe both of us lost sight of the tactics once the scoreline became what it was, because we were just having fun. I don't even remember the last 30 minutes, really, because I was just you know, on a cloud 9.
I was like, more goals, please.
Yeah, I know. One quick note, because we're going to talk about DeAndre Yedlin in a minute. One quick note is that Federico Redondo was seen after the game getting in his cardio to make sure that he's match fit for later this week. We heard from Tata Martino earlier in the day that he's very confident that Redondo will be available for that game against Nashville. maybe this will be part of our conversation about DeAndre Yedlin and what the team will look like. But I guess worth reporting that he is on the way and he should be available for the next game.
Yeah, super positive all around. I'm waiting for him to be in action soon and become available. I think it's going to create a bit of questions about what the midfield setup should look like, but I think those are good questions to have. So get him on the pitch as soon as possible.
I appreciate you taking that, because I'm checking Twitter right now just to see if there's anything, any new updates on this DeAndre Yedlin situation, but it doesn't seem like there's anything yet. So let's just get into it. It was announced about 2 hours ago by or maybe 3 hours ago now, by Tom Bogart and a lot of other journalists that Inter Miami is trading DeAndre Yedlin to FC Cincinnati for $172,000 in GAM. DeAndre Yedlin was one of the highest earners on the team, earning close somewhere between $700,000 and $800,000. So they get a big salary off the books. But they also lose their starting right back for a team that just won 5-0 against their rivals and one of the best teams in the league.
Yeah, man, a big loss. And also, it came out of the blue for me, particularly because I wasn't following any movement in the transfer, outgoing especially. I'm not sure if we're as well covered in the right back position, and losing someone of the quality of DeAndre Yedlin for someone who has the leadership of in that locker room like DeAndre Yedlin, it might actually be a big loss. But as I mentioned earlier, I'm not entirely sure what the mindset behind this is. Are we looking to go in for another right back? Are we expecting someone like a Boothright to come in, or maybe Gressel to take up the right back position? And honestly, the GAM money doesn't seem to be that high for us to be making this particular move either. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on this.
Yeah, let me play some ground rules that maybe help our conversation with this. Inter Miami was cap compliant before the RSL game, so this move wasn't necessary. But they were seemingly up against it in terms of their maneuverability for the rest of the season. They have tried to move Jean Mota, who also has a big contract similar to Yedlin. And he's a guy I think they still would like to move. But this move wasn't necessary to play on Thursday. It wasn't necessary to compete for the next couple of weeks. They have been linked to the right back from the Houston Dynamo. His name's Franco Escobar. They were linked to him a couple of weeks ago, right before the season started, and nothing really came of it. And we talked about it then that maybe he's not, you know, the fact that it's already leaked, we thought maybe it wasn't going to happen. I think as soon as I saw this trade, I think that immediately came to mind that maybe Miami does have a deal lined up with Houston. Franco Escobar did play with Tata Martino in Atlanta, so he is familiar. He's also from Argentina, so culturally he's a fit. I don't know if Inter Miami has an international roster slot for him. I don't know if he requires one. I don't know that much about his play style. I just see he's not very big. So I don't know if he's a defensive center back. I don't know much about him. Let's talk, but before we get into what this means for the team, let's talk about Yedlin as a player and what we're losing. Obviously, he's a guy that is a captain, like you mentioned, good in the locker room. Last season, if you give me a second, I'll pull up his games played, but he was sort of something of an Iron Man for the team. I think he missed, aside from a few games from international duty, he played almost every game, especially once Harvey Neville sent out on loan.
When he plays every single game, 41 appearances. Wow. That's a lot. And for someone, the way he plays, every game that he plays, he gives his all. Like, you can see he's the one who sweats it out all on the pitch. One thing that can be said of DeAndre Yedlin is when he plays, you can't fault his effort. And that's more than anyone can ask for. And that, I think, is a really good coach's player as well, because coaches love those sorts of players. So I think in terms of the effort that we're going to lose, in terms of the leadership that we're going to lose from having him go out, I'm not sure if it's worth it or not. I really hope that they have something in mind and bring in a player who can replace him like for like, and there's not a drop in quality. But it's going to be a big loss for sure.
He played 3,300 minutes last year. That was the most of any outfield player. Only Drake Callender played more. So he was really an Iron Man for this team. And we talked about his long-term impact on, you know, what he means for the Inter Miami franchise. He is leaving as the long, you know, having tied for the most amount of appearances in club history. As far as what it means, here are my initial thoughts. And like I just mentioned, we've been linked to Franco Escobar. That deal might happen in the next hour, and all of what I'm about to say may be useless. But I'm just going to assume that there is no replacement coming in as of right now. And we'll talk about it on the next podcast if there is. My first thoughts is that I hate interrupting a team when they're going into an important stretch of games and they are coming off of good form in a great game. And yesterday, I think they played pretty well to start the season as far as their general form. Then the next thing I thought was Frede is now healthy. Maybe this is Tata and Chris Henderson forcing a move to a 3-5-2 formation where Gressel can play as a wing back. I don't think either of us think he's going to play as a right back. So that was my next thought, and that was pretty scary. But we saw it in the beginning of the preseason. This is something that Tata wants. He thinks this is how he gets his best 11 on the field. What are your thoughts about a 3-5-2?
For any of the listeners who listened to our previous podcast, especially during the preseason, you would know that both Scotty and myself have come to despise the 3-5-2 for Inter Miami. I don't think it's a great formation to rely on, especially as our primary formation. I think the 4-3-3 has always been the go-to and where the players look the most comfortable. So if this is where we're heading, and if that's the direction that Tata Martino is trying to take, then oof, it's going to be a hard one to digest and a hard pill to swallow. I really hope that's not the case, because in one of his interviews, he's mentioned that 4-3-3 and 3-5-2 are going to be the ones that he relies on more. And again, I don't think he can get the best out of the team in a 3-5-2, because the players just don't seem comfortable, especially doing it once the season has started. I think it's a bit of a gamble, and I don't know if we have the personnel to play that style. Yes, we could see Gressel in a right wing back position, but I just feel that takes away a little bit from our defensive stability. And the defenses look great in the last couple of games. So to alter that and change all of that just to have his preferred formation in the field, I'm not sure, man. It gives me a concern, especially after the game that we've had.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said. I don't think this team, and especially I think maybe most importantly, is our next game is maybe the biggest game in, you know, a top five game in club history in terms of importance, going on the road to Nashville, who is really sound defensively. It's a team that we're gonna have to break down with good combination play, good, you know, just to make that switch going into this game, I think is really tough. So I'm pretty nervous about that. The lineup makes sense if you do the 3-5-2, because you have Frede, Christoph, and Tota Aviles in the back line. Alba and Gressel can play that wing back position, and then maybe David Ruiz, or actually Redondo, can just come into the midfield and replace Yedlin in the starting 11. But I agree, I'd be pretty nervous. If we see that on the team sheet on Thursday, I will circle the whole team sheet as something I'm pretty concerned about. I'm going to try and be more optimistic about this and say that this gives the team or the roster more flexibility moving forward. I was relatively confused about why Inter Miami was trying so hard to make Federico Redondo the replacement for Facundo Farias. And this, as soon as I saw this, this also kind of clicked, where I think Inter Miami is trying to leave that third DP spot available for another big addition, either in the summer or in the next couple of months, although I think it'd be more likely in the summer. For those that don't know, Inter Miami's third DP right now is Leo Campana. He doesn't make more than the max TAM, so it would be theoretically possible to get him under the DP spot. Now, if you are going to add another DP, he would have to be a young DP, a player 23 and under. So it's not like they're going to use this spot on Sergio Roberto or, you know, one of Messi's other friends from Europe. Do you think that's something we might see, where we leave ourselves a little hamstrung for the first half of the season in order to have that flexibility in the summer to make the moves we might need to make then?
I feel like that's kind of shooting yourself in the foot, because you don't know how the rest of the season progresses before you can actually make another transfer move and before the summer comes in. So I feel like you want as good of a start to the season as possible, and you want stability, because without stability, the team is nothing. Without consistency, the team is nothing. So doing that just to make yourself more comfortable going into the summer doesn't make sense, because the games are coming thick and fast, and some of the most important games are at the start of the season, not towards the tail end, especially with the Nashville game coming up in that particular tournament. So I don't think that's a great strategy to go with if that's what they're thinking about, because I think it's consistency and it's setting the foundations for the rest of the season that's more important. But again, I have no idea what the backroom staff is thinking, what Chris Henderson is thinking, and maybe they have an absolute ace of a card to play from this. So we'll wait and see what happens. I don't want to be too judgmental at the start, and we'll see whether we are signing somebody else as well, because having no right back, no starting right back going into the season, especially with games coming thick and fast, is a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, I think we were both comfortable with Israel Boatwright as the backup right back, because we knew that DeAndre Yedlin was going to play some of the, you know, one of the highest minute total on the team. So we thought Israel would be brought in on uncomfortable situations when the team wasn't going to put too much pressure on him. He's the only true right back on the roster now. He didn't even make the team sheet on Saturday. So clearly there's no obvious answer on the team. I don't know if Redondo plays right back. I don't know if they plan. I don't think they're planning on playing Julian Kressel at right back. I don't know if Toto Aviles can play right back, and then having a center back partnership of Aviles, I'm sorry, of Christoph and Frede. Ian Frey can probably play right back, but he's not there yet, and that wouldn't be his best position. Franco Negri also coming back. He seems like a pretty left-footed player. I don't see him being a right back. Certainly nothing like DeAndre Yedlin. Noah Allen, he's pretty left-footed. I don't see him being a right back.
Lots of questions. I mean, very little answers.
Robert Taylor can play a little bit of right back. He's not great, but he can play there. But then you have to, you don't have any depth in attack. So maybe David Ruiz can play there. Maybe Diego Gomez can play. I mean, I'm looking at the roster right now. I'm looking at the depth chart, and I don't see the answer. And so that's why, to me, the solution has to be either a change of formation, or they're going to bring in a guy like Franco Escobar or another right back, because I don't see the answer, man.
Yeah, as I said, a lot of questions, but very few answers. So interesting next few weeks going into the season with the games coming up, with the roster makeup to talk about. So I think we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, I like figuring things out, and I like it when things make sense. So my expectation is that if they do bring in another right back, or if they're planning on bringing another right back in, it's going to happen today. I don't think you can make this move without having another move lined up, if that's your plan, because if you go out now and try and find a right back, everyone's just going to hold you for ransom. And Inter Miami doesn't have a lot of playable cards that they can get a right back with. So I think we might get news later today. Maybe once everything becomes official with Cincinnati and the paperwork's all filed, we might hear about the next move. So keep your eyes open for that. Is there anything else you want to mention regarding this, about what the team might look like, or just anything else about for this podcast?
No, I think we've had a great game this week that has got us all buzzing. And some questions to be answered in the coming weeks. So a lot to look forward to. And just one last thing, man. The color is pink, not purple. That's about it.
Florida is pink and papi es papi. Anyways, everyone, thank you so much for listening. This was episode 7 of the Drive Pink Dialogue. As always, I'm Scotty. This was Soar. We really appreciate you, and we hope you have a wonderful day. Until next time.